Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody to the American Overland Podcast. I am your host, Will Fowler with Venture to Rome, and we are coming to you live from the Venture to Rome studio today. In the studio with me is my best buddy in the whole world, Chris from Frontier State Overland. Chris, thank you for being here, dude.
Why, hello, Willis.
It's so surreal to like be in the room with you when we're doing this.
Yeah, it's a little bit nicer. We're not, you know, waiting for like the audio lag to catch up and all that stuff. So a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, a little backstory. So the last few podcasts we've recorded, and some of them I'm editing and will come out like any second. We've been testing out new virtual podcast softwares. And there was one we did with Rob. There's a couple others we did just on our own. And the lag is so bad, it's hard to have like a real-time conversation because like you never know when I'm done talking. I know I talk a lot and you kind of have to wait for your window to begin with. But like
never.
Yeah, the lag is really, really bad. So as a solution to that, instead of finding better software, Chris was like, why don't we just hang out?
And that way I can come to your house and drink your whiskey.
So tonight it's not whiskey though, Chris, it's a bottle of rum that Kate got me. It's a very special bottle of rum from Cuba, and I can't tell you how Kate got it. It's top secret, but this is a bottle of Eminente Ron de Cuba Reserva, aged 7 years, and it is the best rum I have ever had.
I didn't even know that aged rum was a thing.
Yeah,
but man, yeah, it is really good.
Yeah. This is some grade A, like you can just drink it straight.
It's, yeah,
it's really sipping. Good. Really, yeah, it's sipping rum. That's right. Yeah, so that's what we're having tonight. The topic of the podcast today is we're going to cover our trip that we did in the summer to a place called Boulder Basin. And I am just finishing the edit of this video right now, and it's spectacular in a lot of ways, but not spectacular in a couple ways. And we're also going to talk about like, what is this term rock landing? Because the trail Boulder Basin, we think is a really good example of what rock landing is. And so we should talk about that because it's a term that people throw around. And it's a term that like, for example, big companies are starting to use, like they want to be known as kind of rocklander companies. Well, I wouldn't call us rocklanders, Chris.
No, generally we're, I think more traditional overlanders, like a lot of, you know, like backcountry roads and, you know, there's like patches where it's like really rocky and things like that, but nothing necessarily like super technical. Whereas Boulder Basin
is technical.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all of that. Like so that's what's so great about this trail. So we're going to talk about like, what is actually rock landing? Is it just like a softer term for rock crawling, or is it something, is it an actual activity that you do? And then like, how do you go about doing it? So I have an opinion on how that all works together that we'll get into later. But first, let's talk about Boulder Basin. So this is a super special trail for us, Chris. This is my first off-road trail ever. And we've talked about it in this podcast. So we don't like need to recap the whole first time thing, but like it wasn't your first time off-road, but it was maybe your first time doing that kind of off-roading.
Yeah, I think so. I'd done like some, you know, kind of, I don't know if it would like even be called like overlanding, cause they were all just like day trips, but nothing that was like really, super technical. Mm-hmm. And so I would agree Boulder Basin was kind of my first, like, you know, exposure to something that was, you know, pretty technical. Like you really have to, you know, figure out like where you're going to place your tires and have kind of an idea of what your rig is capable. And, like the first time we went, it was like, so stressful. I ended up with like a migraine.
Yeah. We came back down and we were going to go in and get pizza in Ketchum. So Boulder Basin is just outside of Ketchum. It's between Ketchum and Stanley, Idaho. It's a super beautiful part of the country. It's a super beautiful part of Idaho. It's in the middle of, the White Cloud Mountains, the Boulder Mountains, the Pioneer Mountains, and they're all like just beautiful 10,000-11,000 foot peaks. It's just like, it's just picture perfect kind of wilderness mountain, environment. So we were going to go back into Ketchum, which is probably 30 minutes from the trailhead. And you were like, nope, I'm not feeling good, guys. We went in and had pizza. And we came back later and we're like, are you okay? Are you sick? And you're like, no, I think I'm okay. And we realized later it was probably just like the letdown from,
yeah,
the stress of the trail.
I think so. I think it was just coming down from like all the adrenaline and stuff. Because like, honestly, you know, as much as I like to say that I had a lot of experience, I really didn't, at least not with that. And so it was just like the letdown and coming down from, you know, really stressful run.
And, but I think because Boulder Basin is such a special trail for us, we want to share that with other people. Mm-hmm. But it was stressful for us. And it's not like we're rock crawlers. Cause when I mentioned Boulder Basin to rock crawlers, and there might be some rock crawlers listening to this podcast right now or on Facebook groups or whatever, they're like yawn. Mm-hmm. Like that's just a Sunday day trip trail. It's no big deal. And they're not wrong.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of, that trail can be as hard as you want it to be. There are some things that you have to navigate, but if you're used to just driving down basically dirt roads in the backcountry, maybe some unkept dirt roads and some whoops and washouts and things, but nothing that's like rocky or like when you're like, I have to go over that boulder if I want to go forward on this trail, how do I do that? Or like, here's this trail that has turned into a creek bed that is now full of boulders. How the heck am I going to pick a line through that? These are decisions that like you generally don't have to make when you're just kind of like straight overlanding that you do have to make on that trail. So it is technical. I think it's a medium to hard overlanding trail, and it's an easy to medium rock crawling trail.
Yeah. I think that's really well said. It's a trail that, like you said, experienced rock crawlers will have like no problem. Mm-hmm. Like they're just going to go up there and it's not an issue. And actually we've run into some of those folks who have had these built rigs and they just go up it and down it in a day. And it's like, no problem. But if you're like in an overland rig and you don't have high clearance and if you don't have four low, it could turn into a real problem.
You turn around. People turn around on that trail all the time. So this is a shout out to my buddy, Justin Andrews over at Factor 55, who's also a sponsor of Venture to Rome YouTube channel. So Factor 55 makes recovery gear. It's the best in the world, in my opinion. And they're a Boise company. So clearly I'm biased. But I brought this up to him when we went, when we came back in August. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just got back from Boulder Basin, you know, and it didn't go great. You know, we had some problems. Not everyone was super enthused about going all the way up. And he was like, what? That's not even a hard trail, you know? And like for him, like Mr. Recovery,
yeah,
you know, and he's got this super built Gladiator and he's like, I towed a trailer up that thing. Like what's everyone's problem? I can't believe it. And I was like, well, not everyone does that, you mm-hmm. know, like nights on the trail, that's not equal trail difficulty. And a lot of the group that we were in on this recent trip have tons of nights on the trail.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily go out to like find the hardest trail. That's not why we go out. And this just came up on my Patreon. So if you're listening to this and you're interested in becoming a Patreon supporter, please go to patreon.com/venture to Rome. There, you know, there's links everywhere on my website and YouTube channel, blah, 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 blah. I would love to have you. It's really, really cool. It's a really small group of people right now, but one of them reached out and they were like, what's the hardest trail you've ever done? Cause I did a post on this Boulder Basin video. And I was like, yeah, it's a hard question because I don't go looking for hard trails. Like that's not what we do.
Not
we don't
really, no.
Look for hard trails. We look for places to explore and the trail is secondary.
Yeah.
And it's not like, we love to take interesting routes to places, but like, it's not like, hey, let's go find a really hard trail to drive. It's like, no, let's go find a cool place to explore.
That's isolated. We tend to look for like, where is everybody else not?
Yes.
Like we intentionally look for places where there's no other people, but you're right. We don't look for the most technical trails. That's not necessarily a factor for us.
But when the trail to an amazing place is technical, we don't shy away from it. No. That's kind of what makes a lot of fun, which is when you get into like rock landing, what that is. You touched on something that I want to say, because we developed inadvertently a philosophy on an overlanding on like when you're kind of choosing, well, should we go left or should we go right? There was this moment years ago where we were on the, I think the North Fork or going to the North Fork or something of the Boise River. We had been on top of Trinity Mountain, which is above Featherville, Idaho, which is part of the BDR. It's just a beautiful mountain up there. And we were trying to find like where to go next. So we had driven down to the Boise River. And we're like, we stopped for lunch on the river and we're trying to figure out, we're like, well, which way should we go? And it's like, I don't know. Geez, how do you decide when you can go anywhere you want? Mm-hmm. And I remember you were like, well, you know, we saw a bunch of people driving across this bridge and turning left, but we didn't see anyone turning right. I think we should go right.
Yep.
Like, yes, we should. And that's been our philosophy basically ever since. We come back to that moment or that saying, it's like, where have less people gone? Let's go there.
Yeah. And it's funny because that trip was kind of one of the ones where we kind of at least converted Elsha a little bit, because she was like, hey, we have this really great spot at Trinity. Why are we leaving?
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, right. Okay, well, let's go and see what else is out there. And she's like, well, why? Yeah. And we ended up finding some other like awesome places. So,
well, that's the time that we found that one spot that's become our kind of back pocket spot on the North Fork of the Boise River that she loves. It was like had a little beach. It was right on the river and we had an amazing night that night. I think that's when she got it. She's like, oh, cause you could find something else that's different with, you know, go from a mountain down to a river. That's
yeah.
In one weekend. That's amazing.
Yeah. And it kind of opened up a whole new world to her. And So she hasn't turned back since.
No, she hasn't. No, she's been skinny pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been really cool. So, okay. So back to Boulder Basin. So this summer, late August, we decide to share Boulder Basin with our friends who had been wanting to go. So we'd been up twice before this. Once as our first kind of off-roading thing where we turned back. The second time we went back, me, you, our buddy JP and his taco, and our buddy Tim and his LR3 has now died its final death. And so what Tim's going to build next will be really interesting. He has an LR4 and it's like, man, you just love those Land Rovers. You just love complicated rigs. So, we went up and we got started. We were going to like camp halfway up that night, the second time we went. But we got so jazzed, so excited about going up. No one wanted to stop. So we just wound up driving up all of Boulder Basin at night in the dark. And it was an incredible trip. The next day, it was just a ton of fun. I think we've already covered that trip, so I won't go into the details, but it was just a ton of fun. So you and I had these two different experiences with Boulder Basin.
Yeah.
And we have come away with a ton of confidence. Like, we've done a ton of other trips as well. We've had lots and lots of experiences since that first time driving off-road. So we're not noobs when it comes to driving, but we certainly gained a lot of confidence by driving that particular trail twice. And when you drive the same trail more than once, you know what's coming. So you can kind of like organize your nerves accordingly versus like when you don't know, it's like, oh my God, this is going to continue. What's even after this? Like, how am I going to get back down? Like all those questions that you're facing. And so,
well, and you also know that like, okay, I've done this before. I can do it again.
Right. Yes.
So, and it just gives you that confidence and let alone doing it in the dark, right. Which made us feel like celebrities. Cause we had all these guys in side by side saying like, you guys did that in the dark. Right. And we're like, yeah. And they're like, wow.
Why?
It's like, we didn't really have a choice.
Yeah. Well, so, we didn't have a place to camp. So we just kept driving. So, in any case, we wanted to share with our other friends who hadn't been yet. And one of them was Lance, who drives drove a Tundra. Mm-hmm. And Ryan, our other buddy, who's been on some other really fun experiences with us. So he went on the Birch Creek Ranch trip with us.
Yeah.
It was just me, you, and him. He's the coolest guy. It was like a daddy-daughter's trip. And his daughter is best friends with my daughter, who's best friends with your daughter. And the three of them were instant besties.
Oh, yeah. Inseparable.
Yeah.
And by the way, Ryan has some of the best stories.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just...
Not made for radio
or not TV made, stories. No, they're not PG. But yeah, just a great guy. And it takes a lot of pride in driving a stock Rubicon.
That's right.
Like, it's pretty much unmodified.
But like a super easy guy to travel with. He's just like, you know, he's just That's why our crew is so great, because of guys like Ryan, you know.
Yeah.
We just have fun. It's about fun. Oh, he came out to, he did Jarbage with us too.
Yeah.
So he was on that video on the Jarbage, the Mudfest in Jarbage. So in any case, so he was with us and he was pulling his Jumpin' Jack trailer. And then a new friend, Nick from Zag Runner. So Nick has a channel called Zag Runner on YouTube, and it's about his Forerunner, and he does mountain biking stuff. And he went to Gonzaga for college, hence the Zag. If anyone's wondering, why would you call your channel Zag Runner? Well, he's a Zag. So, and he moved to Idaho from Oregon not too long ago. And he and I were kind of friends on YouTube because I think he makes really cool videos. And then we kind of hung out, had coffee a couple times, started chatting about stuff. And then we went on a trip together. And this was our second, or was this our first trip with Nick?
Boy, I think this was like our first trip.
This was our first trip with
Silver City was the second one.
That's right. Our first trip with Nick was Boulder Basin. So
yeah. Well, and that was, and that was quite a initiation for him. And by the way, like if you watch Nick's channel, the Zag Runner channel, yes, he really is that nice.
Yeah, he's a super nice guy. And his dad is the coolest dude ever.
Oh, man. Yeah, Mac. They're great guys.
Yeah.
You could just hang out with them for like just days.
Totally. I feel bad because like in the video that I'm about to release tomorrow, hopefully on Boulder Basin, I had all this really great footage of just like hanging out around the campfire, hanging out having breakfast. But like in the service, to service the story, it just felt indulgent to keep all that stuff in. So a lot of that stuff wound up on the cutting room floor, but there are so many great moments hanging out. Like, you know, here are people who had never met most of us,
Mm-hmm.
And they came, and this crew, our crew is really tight knit. Like me, you, Lance, Ryan, Tim, we're so tight knit and our families know each other. And it's like an intimate thing to travel this way with people. Nick, I'm like, great, come on in. Cause that's kind of, it's kind of my personality is like, yeah, let's go do something together. And so he and Mac kind of joined this really tight knit group and just fit in so well, like so nice, so easy. I mean, we had great conversations. So like a lot of props to Nick and Mac for like, you know, being comfortable around a bunch of people who are already really close. Cause that's not easy.
Yeah. And not just the like regular people, but people with like kids and dogs.
And like real strong opinions and a nonstop desire to like rib each other constantly. So yeah, they did great. So, I mean, they're clearly part of the crew. So we take them up to Boulder Basin and we drive through Ketchum. It's this, you know, 5-rig convoy or something like that. And that night we stay up near Copper Basin, and Copper Basin is also outside of Ketchum, Idaho, and is one of the most beautiful places on the planet. You and I haven't properly done it. Kate and I did it for a weekend a few years ago, but we have yet to go back with you guys and really do it.
Yeah. We'd love to do that.
Yeah. And it is just a gorgeous place. So we drove up, but it was night because we had left late. It was Friday and people are working, I leave after work. We get into camp, it's dark, we have a great night, hang out, we get up the next morning, it had rained that night, and so like, you know, starting your day with like wet gear, but it seemed fine, like no one really was complaining, it wasn't like a soaking muddy wet, it was more like a cleaned everything off rain kind of wet.
Yeah, it was nice, everything wasn't drenched, we weren't like, you know, walking through puddles of water and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely wet though.
I think the place that we camped was like 45 minutes from downtown Ketchum.
Yeah, that's probably about right. And it was one of those things too, where, you know, I was kind of like thinking, okay, well it's wet here. How is that going to be when we drive up Boulder Basin?
Exactly. Yeah.
But it wasn't something that, you know, made us like gave us enough pause to like think that we couldn't do it.
Right. Yep. Because Boulder Basin's wet, but it was August. You know, most of the snowmelt had come down. So we take off that morning. We drive down, and I gotta tell you this: it's called Trail Creek Road out of Ketchum, and it is just a beautiful drive. Oh my God, It is, I don't even know how to explain it with words. I hope that we did it justice with images, even though I know we didn't, but maybe we came close because we had some pretty good images of it. It's just this ledge road, a beautifully maintained ledge road. Like, it's not technical in any way. It's like flat and graded. It's narrow in parts. So when you pass somebody, you kind of have to figure that out if there's somebody coming the other direction. But it just leads right up into the Pioneer Mountains, and it's just so beautiful. So we're driving down that towards Sun Valley, which is also one of the most beautiful places in Idaho. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we take a right at Sun Valley and start driving towards Stanley, which is another one of the most beautiful places in all of Idaho, towards Galena Pass and Galena Summit.
Well, and like, honestly, the way I kind of think about this is like, this is the place where Ernest Hemingway, like the world traveler, you know, author, this was his place to go and kind of like recenter himself.
Yeah.
And it's that for a reason.
Yep. There is a reason that Ketchum, Idaho is overrun with celebrities.
Yeah.
So like, if for those of you who don't know, Sun Valley, Idaho is a ski resort in Ketchum. And it was built by the owner of the railroad at the time. He wanted to build like a tourist stop, and they turned this beautiful mountain into a ski resort. And it is a world-class ski resort. It's got 3,000 foot of vertical. It's really huge, aggressive, just beautiful terrain, good snow. And it's just this kind of like super luxury ski resort. Well, that attracts all kinds of folks from California and celebrities. And so, like, you know, name your celebrity and they probably have a cabin, or a cabin is not the right word, like a mansion in Ketchum. But one of the reasons is because it's just one of those blessed places. It is a blessed place on earth. So, you know, Sun Valley Chamber of Commerce, I'm probably doing you a favor here, but like, it's true. It's incredible. And when you're in Ketchum, you feel like you're someplace different than regular Idaho, because it's just a different place. And part of it is because it has such a draw for wealthy individuals that, like, it's a town of like 3,000 people or something like that. And it has like some restaurants that should not be in a town that small, and bars and, you know, boutiques and things like that. So it has a very different feel, but at its roots, it's a, like a sheep village.
Yeah. Well, and like, it's kind of a, I don't know, all these, contradictions, because like one of the best restaurants you can go to is like the Pioneer.
Yeah.
Which you go into it and it's like this kind of a dark, it's not very fancy, but man, if you want like one of the best steaks you'll ever have and a great wine list and stuff like that. And, you know, but you wouldn't know it from looking on the outside. It is not ostentatious.
Yeah. It's kind of saloony looking.
Yeah. And yeah, on the inside too. And, I don't know, just kind of, to me, it kind of captures the spirit of Sun Valley and Ketchum. And, you know, it's, you'll have celebrities in there, but you also have locals in there too.
Yeah. Nobody cares.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that about Idaho. Like, people really don't, they'd rather not know. They'd rather not get involved.
No, they don't really care who you are as long as you're nice.
Yeah. Right. So this is our landscape, right? So we're driving through Ketchum, going to the turnoff for Boulder Basin. And the turnoff for Boulder Basin is really not impressive. There's like a little kind of dirt parking lot where you can air down. And a lot of people park their trailers there because it's more popular with side-by-sides than it is with full-sized rigs. And so you'll see quite a bit of side-by-side traffic. And you'll see some big campers kind of in the lowland, kind of flatland area before you get into the mountains. But it's kind of grassy. I'm not going to say like grassy plains, but like a gentle slope with like beautiful mountain grass on it. And it kind of, the trail just kind of slowly comes into the creek. Mm-hmm. And then you have your first water crossing. And it's like, it is like such a perfect, easy beginner's water crossing. It's like a beautiful stream flowing down a hill. It's probably like 30 or 40 feet wide, so it's not very far, but it's got enough water that you feel the resistance on your wheels when you're driving it, but it's not dangerous in any way. Like, it's like half of your tires submerged or something, so it's not a big deal, but it feels so good.
Yeah, when you drive across it, it's kind of like, welcome to Boulder Basin. Yeah, yes, I'm glad that you're here.
Totally. Yeah, it's like a greeter at the beginning of the trail. Like,
hey, buddy.
You look very good today. Thank you. I hope you enjoy your trail.
Here, let me cleanse the dust off of your tires.
Yes. Clean your tires, sir. On your way. Enjoy. Yeah. And then from there, you kind of get into the woods. And the trail is mostly dirt still at that point with some rocks. And you start climbing a bit. And you kind of wind your way through the woods. There is maybe another water crossing or two. Sometimes it's just a puddle. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's you're kind of crossing that same creek. But nothing is all pretty minor. I mean, all the water crossings really are minor, unless maybe you go in like, you know, June, then mm-hmm. it might be more water, but we were there in August. So, and then you wind your way through the woods until you come upon the cabin.
Yep. The first cabin. Yeah. And it looks like something out of the Blair Witch Project.
100%. It is 100% Blair Witch, that cabin. I mean, it is spooky as hell. I would never want to be there at night. It is that spooky. During the day, it seems like there could be a dead body in there somewhere, but at night, there's definitely demons and spirits and ghosts and witches.
I don't know. Maybe we need to go back there and like camp at one of these, because there's actually like two cabins. There's this one, and then there's another one that's a little bit further up.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe that's something we got to do is go and camp at one of these cabins.
Do the ghost cabin challenge.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd do that.
That's kind of a new thing, the ghost cabin challenge.
Yeah. I mean, we could build a whole YouTube channel on that alone. There's so many of those in Idaho.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you get to these, and we always stop, and like, this is my third time there, and I always get out, and I always like film myself talking in front of the camera, and I always call it the Blair Witch cabin, because it definitely is. But it's also the first milestone. So you reach the cabin. It's kind of like after the first water crossing, your first point of interest. And then from there, the trail starts to change from dirt to more rock. Mm-hmm. But it gradually changes. You get more and more rock in the dirt, and you kind of have to change your driving a bit. You have to look forward a little bit more. You have to be mindful of where you're putting your tires.
Yeah.
Because the trail changes every year based on the runoff and the amount of rigs that have gone up and erosion and all that stuff. And so there could be something that you don't want to drive over or that you need to drive over because it's so big. And so it does change kind of your awareness of the trail a bit at that point.
Yeah. And some of the rocks that are sticking up out of the trail are pretty jagged.
Yeah. So, oh, you're right. Yeah.
That's yeah.
Right.
So like the first time that Elsh and I went up just to kind of explore it before Will, JP and I did our initial run, and we drove all the way up to the Shale Road,
which we will get to in just a second.
Yeah. But there's, you know, we encountered, a family that they had driven their Outback up there, you know, just past the second, cabin without much problem, I don't think. But it was a good call on their part to stop, not necessarily because the, you know, their Outback was, you know, not capable, but like the tires, you know, they were really in danger of destroying their tires.
Yeah. Well, and the second time we went up, do you remember, like, I didn't put this in the video, but we did, I put on video of taking stock of everyone's tires. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Tim who had like two or three nicks, like significant nicks on his sidewalls.
Yep.
I had a couple nicks. You had a ding. So yeah, you're right. Like you have to be mindful of your sidewalls. And that's a good reason for lots of rigs to turn around up there.
Yeah. Well, especially if you don't have sidewalls.
Right.
Like if you're running, you know, basically, you know, I guess low pro tires or whatever, which sounds insane, but a lot of cars basically come with those now.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's kind of a, the trail really changes at that point mm-hmm. from something that, you know, a nice, easy water crossing, you know, easy dirt road to jagged mm-hmm. and a more difficult, water crossing where it has a bit more of a, you know, a steeper approach and departure angle too.
That's true. Yep. 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 And so the rocks become more frequent, more jagged, bigger. And then you kind of work your way through more forest until you come to an opening, and the opening is what we call the Shale Road. And this is a turnaround point. So yeah. You turned around there. I think Nick had been up Boulder Basin before with Mac, and that's where he turned around. I'm pretty sure. So Nick, if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I think that's what I remember you saying. And other folks, there's clearly that that is a spot that you can actually turn your rig around. I think that's, people see that road and mentally they're like, no, nope, I'm done. I'm going back because that didn't look right.
Yeah. Well, and Lance, like, who is like one of the biggest, you know, like, you know, badasses that we know.
Yeah.
This is like where on this last trip that we did with his, you know, beautifully built Tundra, like his anxiety level, I think, went up exponentially when we got to the base of that shale road.
Yeah.
Like it becomes real there because it, the trail changes so much.
It's from not that a point trail on. Anymore. You're now you're driving on 100% rock.
Yep.
And it's shale. I think it's, I mean, we call it shale. So I'm going to say it's shale rock. It's a ledge road, that's cut out of the side of the mountain. It's a steep drop off and it's all rock. There's nothing to stop your fall. There's no trees. It's all rock. So if you roll, you're going for a long time and it's going to be really painful. And there is a trail that's in it, that's kind of worn in, but when you drive it, the road shifts underneath you. Like you can feel the rocks moving as you drive, and the way it's been kind of driven in, there is a bit of a, I don't know what you would call a cup on the downhill side. So like, it's not like you're driving on the actual edge, which I don't think is actually a difficult drive, but mentally you have to figure it out. And Lance was so wide. There's a couple points. In fact, I caught it on camera once. He was turning into the mountain. And turning into the mountain is a mistake because you now are severely off camber.
Yeah.
Because it's a really, it's a pretty severe slope coming into that ledge road. And so I saw him do that a couple times as he was trying to avoid the ledge because he's so wide. So he probably has like, you know, 6 inches less room for error than we do in a Jeep. And when you're in a road, on a road like that, that's meaningful. Those are meaningful inches.
Yeah.
So he's driving that. He's kind of trying to figure out how his Tundra's going to get to the next thing. This is his first experience doing it, right? So he's like, well, okay, this trail hasn't gotten easier at any point. Keeps getting harder, more technical, more mentally daunting. And so I don't know how long we spent on the shale road. There was four rigs at that point because we forgot to say Ryan opted not to go up.
Yeah.
Ryan was like with his family. He's like, I'm going to go find a hot spring. We're good. We don't need to go up that route. No problem.
Yeah. Ryan was living his best life at the hot spring with the wife and the kids.
Totally. Totally. So we're on the shale road, which is, it's the second milestone. So the cabin's the first, shale road's the second. And the shale road is a point where things get serious. The rest of the trip from there on is more technical. And it is, I would call it like, that's when it gets medium to hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a spot on the shale road that, I don't know, I didn't remember it being an issue when we went up and over it. And maybe it was because our rigs have a shorter wheelbase. But there was a spot where Lance and the Tundra was going, you're kind of off camber, but you're also going up over this like little peak in the road.
It's like a rock slide that came down over the road basically.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, I think it was worse than last time we were there.
I don't even remember that the first two times. So it could have been new.
Yeah. And so like we went up over it. Okay. Just like no problem. The 4Runner did it. No problem. It does kick you off camber towards the edge.
The downhill side, which is never fun.
Yeah. No. And that is a kind of a mind trip. But poor Lance, like because his rig is like longer, like he was dragging his belly.
That's right. Yeah. He like, I wouldn't call that a high center, but he was definitely dragging.
No. Yeah. He was able to make it over, but he was dragging, you know, his rocker panels.
That did not help his state of mind.
No.
So, but like, it's so funny. Cause it's like you were in the front in case somebody needed a winch. I was in the back in case somebody needed a winch, and our Jeeps are just like tractoring up, you know, and we'd been up enough, not that we're pros, but we've been up two times before and we were like, yeah, I mean,
yep. Four low and just
four low. And this is fun. It's great. Yeah. Like check out the scenery. Like this is beautiful. And Lance is thinking like, I'm going to ruin my truck, you know, and Nick's probably thinking like, this is as far as I've been, what's going to be next. I'm a little nervous. And we're just like, yep. It's going to be great, guys. It's going to be great. So then you get through the shale road, you get a little more forest after the shale road, And then you come to probably my favorite spot in the whole trail.
Driving through the creek.
The creek. You get to choose. It's like choose your adventure.
Yeah.
You can go around and that's fine. There's the road splits, and or you can drive right through the creek that you've been crossing back and forth. And part of the trail is just right directly in the creek. And it's just so cool. And again, in August, it's probably like 4 inches deep. You know, it wasn't that deep, maybe 6 inches. I don't know. But it was,
it's easy.
It's easy, and but it's cool.
Yeah. And it's kind of, I don't know, like it's a nice reset, like after doing the Shell Road, if you, are, you know, if it's kind of thrown you off a little bit going up the Shell Road, getting into the creek, it's like, okay, this is beautiful. It's easy. You got to, you know, squeeze between a couple of rocks that, you know, make it a little tight, but it's totally doable. Like Lance did in his Tundra, no problem. Yeah. And
you just put a tire on and you're fine.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a nice hard reset.
Yep.
For a moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then you take a couple turns and you reach what is the point of the trail that most people talk about. It's the point of the trail where you really have to ask yourself, can I do this? And do I want to do this? Mm-hmm. I would call this is the most technical stretch of the trail. And it's the point where we turned back the first time.
Yeah.
We couldn't get through it. We had run out of time because we weren't camping. So we had to come back. Plus we were like stressed out of our gourds and noobs, didn't know what we were doing. Mm-hmm. The second time we were ready for it, we kind of plowed through, and this time we were also ready for it. And we were ready to kind of like advise and coach the group, but we didn't want to push them too far. So to describe, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, like, and to me, this is like kind of the spot in the trail where it goes from overlanding, because I think everything up to this point, like most overland rigs can do.
Yeah.
But when you get to this point, when you're starting to go up this like old creek bed with like a bunch of small boulders in it, mm-hmm. to me, this is like where it goes from overlanding to rock landing.
Rock landing. Absolutely. Yeah. That's good. I'm glad you brought that up because, this is where soft roaders turn around.
Yeah.
Right. So let me just try to describe what it looks like. So Their trail in sections is very overgrown on the sides with like, I would call like some kind of laurel plants.
I think they're like willows.
Maybe they're willows. Thank you. Okay. So willows. And so you're getting some pinstripes coming through here. Not bad. Nothing too bad. But you come out and there are two routes you can take. Like you can go right or you can go left. Both routes have, I would say, like an equal number of problems and obstacles.
Yeah.
You are essentially driving in a creek bed / washout. And so you've got boulders that are getting pushed down by the snow, by the runoff, by the rigs. And I would say like the boulders, when we talk about boulders, I would say they're just like very large rocks. So, you know, maybe 3 foot, like a 3 foot rock, which is that's a big rock.
Yeah.
So when you're looking, and the pitch is a lot more severe. So you've just come through this kind of nice little flat land area where you drive through the creek bed and then you hit an incline and it's really steep. The rocks are really loose. There's water that's flowing down both of these routes. So from this point on, you're never like not in running water.
Yeah. And you're in the rocks that you're driving over. This is something that, you know, I kind of take for granted. Like if you're driving like in the Waihees or even like in Boulder Basin up to this point, the rocks are kind of, you know, jagged or, you know, they got like hard edges to them. Mm-hmm. Well, at this point, the rocks are all smooth. They're all like, it's like river rock.
Yeah.
But it boulders.
Is. Yeah.
And so you are constantly like throwing rocks, behind you. Like you're driving like, you know, slow. But, you know, just like the weight of your vehicle and just a little bit of slippage, you'll hear like a you know, a rock the size of like a softball clanking underneath your rig.
Yeah.
And that just, it just kind of adds to the whole experience where you're like, What was that? You know, what did I break?
Yep. Yeah. So your tires are always kind of searching for traction a little bit because all those rocks are moving under you and it's really wet and they're really smooth, like you said. And you come to this kind of, I would call it like the last climb before the first significantly technical obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the only really significantly technical obstacle that you have to drive. Because the other ones, there's more later, but you can kind of drive around them.
Yeah, there's bypasses for
them. This one, there's no way around because it's like ledge on one side. It's like rock mountain on the other side. By the way, that rock mountain like protrudes out and makes you feel like you have even less space on the trail. And to get up to this obstacle, it's like a minefield of these very large boulders. And this is the point in this current trip where Lance stopped his rig, he got out. Nick stopped his rig and he got out and they just walked the trail. And this is good practice. Like yeah. You should walk the trail. So we walked the trail and like, honestly, people had trouble even walking the trail because it was so steep and the rocks were moving under their feet. And we were in like, you know, like we're in like flip flops because it's August.
Yeah. Water's running down the trail. And
so like
you're wet and slipping.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The mental state of Nick and of Lance was clearly agitated. Like they were struggling. And Elsha was like full on, I'm not doing this. I mean, she wasn't like, I refuse, but she was like looking for reasons to not do it.
Yeah. And like for me, you know, I've done it before and now I actually have bigger tires than the last time I did it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? Like, you know, I'm just letting her process it. You know, when you're married for a while, you know, we've been married for 20 plus years, you kind of know the other person and how they process things. And, so, you know, there are ways that I would be able to do it. No problem.
Yep.
And, you know, she would kind of shake her head at me, but then she would, you know, have that elation of getting up it.
Yeah.
Because like, honestly, the trail had changed, but not that much. And no. I would argue it hadn't gotten any harder.
I don't think it had gotten any harder. No. So people were saying like the trail was harder than it was a few years before. And honestly, I don't think that's right because we stacked rocks for the Taco and we stacked rocks for the LR3, but we didn't stack rocks for the Jeeps.
No,
we didn't need to. So you and I are up there talking to everybody, trying to explain how they might drive this.
Mm-hmm. And willing to stack rocks for them.
Exactly. And I actually just started stacking rocks. I was like, you know what, guys? I'm just going to start stacking rocks because you'll see. Like, you'll see. I'm going to stack rocks around all this stuff. It'll be fine. Just drive over it. It's going to shift under you and get easier when it has weight on top of it. And then when you get up to this obstacle, which is kind of a big boulder that you have to crawl over, like there's room. There's room. You just kind of push it to the right. Tires do the work. You're going to be off camber for a second, but it's no worse than a bad washout in terms of being off camber. It's just mentally when you look at, you're like, oh my gosh, cars shouldn't do that.
Yeah. And then you have like also just kind of the stress from everything you've done before.
Yeah. And no confidence that what's coming next is any better.
Yeah. Even though I would agree with you that that's probably like the hardest single spot of the entire trail. Yeah. And honestly, it's not even really that hard if you have even a slightly built rig with some protection.
This is where Justin from Factor 35 would be like, come on.
Yeah.
Knock it off. Get in your car and drive up.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we don't want to push that on other people. And we experience that ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, our first time up. Exactly. Yeah. So you and I kind of, we advised, we let everybody else kind of process. And we found out some really important information. We found out that Lance had zero protection under his Tundra. He didn't even have rock sliders. I had no idea he didn't even have rock sliders. So
yeah,
he was at risk. He was the one rig at risk, I think, of actually damaging his door panels or something. Cause he may have slid on some of those.
Yeah. Well, boulders. Like, yeah. And I would have honestly with his wheelbase, I would have been worried he would have damaged his driveline.
Yeah.
Plus he had the stock bumpers on, which aren't exactly made for, you know, the best approach and departure angle.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a couple of things that later on we kind of thought about and looked at and,
yeah,
you know, kind of tempered our view of the entire trip.
Yeah. And we also learned that Nick was fully armored.
Yeah. And
we're like, you were talking to Mac and Mac was like,
He
can do it. He's fully armored. Like, he's spending this money on this Under Armour for his rig.
Yeah. But Nick was doing, like, you know, what any like good dad would do is, like, you know, encouraging, but not pushing. And, you know, he's like, yeah, he can totally do it. And I think, you know, like, you know, for Nick, just kind of like the entire, you know, cumulative experience up to that point was just a ton. And mm-hmm. he since then said, okay, yeah, I could have done it. I should have done it.
And this is what we learned about Nick, is that Nick is really safety conscious.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want anything bad to happen. He doesn't want anybody to get hurt. And I wouldn't necessarily say he's risk averse, but he is safety conscious. So I was talking about stacking rocks and we're having like these, you know, discussions about, well, what happens if you stack rocks and drive over them and those rocks move, you know? And it's like, I guess when you have a Jeep, those are minor issues. Cause we're like, you keep driving, you'll be fine. You know, and he's thinking about, and he's got the brain of an engineer for sure. So he's thinking like, okay, but if that happens and this could be a result and this could be a chain reaction and all these things. And so as we're processing all of this, this convoy of Jeeps was coming back down. There was one TJ and two.
That was a YJ.
Oh, it was a YJ.
Yeah. Sorry. The square, square headlights. Yep.
So one YJ and two JKUs.
Mm-hmm.
And, they came down and I have this on camera. Like I have what we were talking about, which I can't share on the actual video because there's some bad words that were said, but we were like, you know, like it was like, oh my God. Like Nick was like, holy cow. And we're like, yeah, that's just how you drive it. Like they're aired way down. Mm-hmm. They're just taking that obstacle straight on. And they were driving down. They probably had downhill assist on in their Jeeps and they were just like smiling.
Yeah.
Having a good time. Like the drivers of those three Jeeps were not stressed in any way.
They weren't like, they have like spotters out. No. They weren't stacking rocks. Mm-mm. They were just, you know, Sunday drive.
Yeah. And we had a good chat with them. They were really cool people. And we've since, like, I kept in touch with some of them and it was like, this is what happens when you're in a Jeep convoy. you just drive through it. But when you're in a convoy with a 4Runner and a Tundra, you do have to think differently. And it's not because they're Toyotas. That's not what I mean. It's because it's a full-size rig and a longer SUV.
Yeah.
With smaller tires. I think Lance had 35s.
Yep.
And I think Nick has 33s.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing is, like JP, when he did it on his Taco, he did it in his Taco.
Yeah.
He was not riding a Taco.
I mean, he kind of was.
Yeah. I guess the Taco was taking him for a ride.
Yes.
So he had like the biggest 33s, like almost 34s.
Yep.
But he also had a longer wheelbase than the 4Runner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but some of this stuff, it's not just like the wheelbase, it's also the approach angle again, like the front bumper and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think you and I take for granted.
Yeah.
Is we just have such great approach and departure angles.
Well, we have good bumpers that increase that.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're already good, but the aftermarket stuff just increases it just so much where you can just like drive into something straight on and your tire is going to grab before your bumper does.
Yeah. 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 So on this particular trip, the decision was to turn around and head down. So we did that and you and I were both experiencing severe disappointment because I know we both wanted to go up there during the day, like make it up to the top, which we will, Chris. It might just be Will and Chris and Kate and Elsha just skip away for a weekend and just film it and have a great time and do it and not have to worry about anything else but ourselves.
Yeah. Well, and I would argue that like one of our top two camp spots.
Oh yeah.
Is on Boulder Basin.
Oh yeah. There's that maybe meadow.
Even The top one?
It's an A. Well, it's an A campsite. It is an A. I don't know if it's an A plus, but it's an A because it is, it's in a meadow. There's these kind of creeks running through it. There's a shelter with trees, but you get this incredible view of the sky at night and you have these massive boulder peaks above you. I mean, oof.
Honestly, I have trouble thinking about like how you can get much better than that one.
Seriously. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah. So your A is my A plus.
Yeah. It's very, very good. So, so we got to go back. We just got to go back.
Yeah.
So we head down and then the group kind of divides up because we're like, okay, let's leverage our talents and find a good camp spot. Yep. So we kind of like split up into three different valleys and started looking for a campsite. And Nick found one that he had marked, I think previously on Gaia GPS or Google Earth or something. And so he kind of called to us on the radios and we all rallied back at this campsite. And it was great. It was like hidden away in the woods. Mm-hmm. It was pretty secluded. There was a creek running by. It didn't have any views or anything. But it was still really, really pleasant. We had a nice night. You made an incredible dinner.
Thank you.
It was Korean chicken barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, it's so good. You and Korean food, man. You like,
I don't know. Mm. Yeah. Like a friend of mine, like, you know, he and his wife introduced me to it. So, anyway, yeah, I'm a big fan of the Korean food now.
And Elsha invented four new cocktails that night.
Mm-hmm.
So I filmed one of them. Well, I filmed all of them, but I put one of them in the video and it was like inspired by Boulder Basin.
Yeah. And she actually, so she made them that night, but she had been working on them for, I don't know, probably about 2 weeks before like this trip. Which was fun for me because she was like, what do you think about this? And so I got to try all these different ones. And
well, dude, we have put those down. We need to pick those back up again.
Yeah.
Those cocktails, mm-hmm. because they were phenomenal.
Yeah.
And we just kind of like let it go after that trip, but we should like publish a cookbook with cocktails in it.
Including. Yeah, cocktails. If you have cocktails in it, is it still a cookbook? I mean,
I think cocktails is cooking. Book? Cooking, yeah, cocktails is cooking for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah, because you get to squeeze a lemon.
Yeah.
That's kitchen work.
Yeah, I guess you could like, yeah, you squeeze a lemon, char a lemon, something.
That's know. Right. That's fire. That's cooking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stick it on one of those s'more sticks and stick it over fire, charred lemon.
Oh my God. So.
It's like, $15.
We're doing a cookbook, man. I'm just going to say this right now. We've been talking about it for a long time. We need to like get off at this year and actually make that cookbook because we have so many cool recipes. I should say you have so many cool recipes you've come up with that we need to put it together and organize it and take pictures because like, yeah, cooking meat on s'mores forks, yeah. Carne asada on s'mores forks for tacos. This Korean barbecue thing on the Otzi flame grill, which is such an awesome grill.
I love that thing.
I know. And we've done ribs on it. You've done pork chops on it. Clearly like we did Korean barbecue, but with like a cauliflower rice base with, I don't know, just sauces and things. So, so, so good. So anyway, we have a great night. And then the next morning on this particular trip, I was trying to get back to Kate. So Kate could not come on this trip. And I had been texting her on my Garmin, trying to get home as early as I could on Sunday. And so I wound up leaving camp earlier than everybody else to try to beeline back for home. But, you know, me being the nerd that I am, trying to film stuff, my drone, and didn't quite get the shot that I wanted. So I kept backing my Jeep up to try again, get the shot with the Sawtooth Mountains in the background, blah, 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 blah. Well, I'd wasted so much time doing that you guys had packed up camp in the meantime.
Yeah, we caught up
like,
yeah,
right yeah. there.
It's like, oh, yeah. What? There's Will. Is he broken down? I don't know. After your discussion with Nick the previous evening, I was like, oh, this could be unfortunate, you know, giving him, you know, well, I guess giving Lance grief about his Toyota being
Oh, that's
broken.
Right. Because the night before Lance had like some through bolts that had come loose on his suspension.
Yeah. His upper control.
Yeah.
His upper control arms. You know, what do they call it? I'm sorry. I don't know much about independent suspension.
Something so. With the CV boot. It's a boot, a CV boot.
That's
boot.
Is it Canadian?
It's a Canadian bolt.
Oh
yeah.
It's a boot.
It's a boot.
Is it very, is it a polite Bolt?
It's a, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a Toyota.
Yeah. Can you get them from Tim Hortons?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
That and a Caesar.
Yeah. And it'll apologize for making you buy it.
That's right.
Because it's Canadian.
And thank you at the same time. So, sorry.
Sorry, eh?
Look, some of my good buddies, I would consider them to be good buddies, are Canadian. I've got three good buddies up there in BC, mm-hmm. Gary, Casey, and Sean. So if you guys are listening to this, I love you, and I'm going to make fun of the way you talk. So,
and at least one of them is a good guy.
At least one of them. So they were working on the Tundra, and I gave them a hard time on camera about doing a trail fix on a Toyota with a bunch of Jeeps, which is totally unfair, but also fair because everything's fair game when you're camping together.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's like an ongoing, and it's a good nature, like ribbing.
Totally.
Like with Nick, and you know, because like he'll give you like all the reasons why you should buy a Toyota. And of course, Will and I, you know, we'll like give you all the reasons why you should buy a Jeep.
Yeah.
And, but at the same time too, it's all in good fun.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And I had just like replaced my drive shaft, you know, like it's not like my Jeep is innocent from trail fixes. So, I drive out, you drive out. I think maybe you guys went to your family cabin or something.
Yeah. It's not too far from there.
Yeah. So. And I went back to Boise. Nick and Mac went exploring. They were not done yet. And they went and found this incredible camping spot, which we have to go to.
Yep.
I mean, that's an A+, dude. Mm-hmm. Cause it's like view of the Sawtooths or view of the White Clouds, or I don't know what mountain range, but it's like incredible. Like we have to go back there.
Yeah. There's a few trails there that, we just got to go and just explore, and I have them marked, and yeah, we need to go to them.
Yeah, we will go there. So that's basically the Boulder Basin trip. Now let's talk about like rock landing and overlanding. We don't need to spend a ton of time on this because I'm sure people are already bored of listening to us talk about our trip. But
maybe they're bored about like listening to you.
That's fair. That's fair because I'm a relatively boring person. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So
I mean, no, Will, you're not boring.
Sorry for being boring. So rock landing. I feel like Boulder Basin is a rock landing type of a trip. When I think rock landing, I think, oh, somebody who puts a tent on their rig and drives the Rubicon Trail.
Yeah.
You know, that's what a rock lander is. But I don't actually think that's what rock landing is. Rock landing is, maybe it's like extreme overlanding.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. So, you know, you have like the overlanding where you're going to like these remote areas, but, you know, maybe the trails aren't super technical, you know, maybe they're a little rocky and you have to have a good set of tires, but you know, you can do them without even putting them to 4 low.
Yeah.
To me, that's kind of like, a little bit of the dividing line is if you have to put your rig into 4 low, chances are you're rock landing because you need that extra low gearing and the extra control. And you know what, like if you're even considering putting on the lockers, that's another clue that you are rock landing.
Yeah, but you can use lockers for low traction environments that are not rock, have anything to do with a rock.
Yeah.
So are we saying rock landing includes like mud and sand, or does it have to be like rocks?
Well, I don't know. Cause I mean like mud and sand, you can do that stuff without lockers. You could just like, you know, goose the skinny pedal and force your way through. Like to me,
okay,
if you're putting on the lockers, you have to have that extra, you know, traction, to get up and over something. And they're usually kind of a lower speed.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. I can go with that. So, by the way, I gotta say that you don't win a medal for not using 4-wheel drive, people. This is something that just bothers me so much. And I tend to be a person who's generally positive and accepting of all different viewpoints, yada, yada, yada. But this whole thing about like, I didn't even put my rig in in a four-wheel drive. Like, why were you even in four-wheel drive? Like, I don't even need it. I didn't need to do that. Like, my rig is so awesome. I kept it in two-wheel drive the whole time. That is like the wrong frame of mind for off-roading in general.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a badge of honor to not put your rig in four-wheel drive, people. Put it in four-wheel drive, for goodness sakes. That's why you bought the rig. Put it in, there are so many benefits from four-wheel drive. There's way more benefits from putting it in four-wheel drive than there are negatives.
Oh, yeah.
Just put it in.
Yeah. And like having like the control and like also like lessening the wear and tear on your rig. You know, yeah, maybe you can do it in two-wheel drive, but that doesn't mean you should.
That's right. But four low is different.
Yeah.
So like you don't actually want to slam it in four low unless you like actually need to have a like high, like a low RPM, high power,
yeah,
high torque situation.
Exactly. And if you're cruising around everywhere in four low, you're gonna be burning through a lot of gas. You know, it's just the engine's running at slightly higher RPMs and you're going a little bit slower, and I don't know, like there's not a ton of benefit. So like for me, I use like four low in like really like steep and low, really low traction environments.
Yeah. Yep.
And then yeah, I'm usually in four high.
Yeah. Okay. So that's our tangent. Four high is a wonderful thing. You should use it. You don't get a badge of honor if you don't use it.
And you're like, impressing nobody.
No one cares
that you're driving in.
You don't get a bro card for not using four wheel drive.
No, we still like you.
Yeah.
But we're going to be annoyed by you.
But we will talk about you on this podcast. Clearly.
Without using names.
Clearly. So, then rock landing is finding more difficult trails, but the intent is the same, right? This is what I think is different about rock crawling. So rock crawlers go out to find a hard trail to do the trail, just to do the trail.
Yeah.
To see if their rig can make it from point A to point B on through those obstacles, mm-hmm. which is incredible and impressive.
Yeah.
Rock landing though, is I want to go explore this area, and this area happens to have points of interest that are drawing me to it, but the way in which I get there is through technical terrain.
Yes. And honestly, like another trail to me, that's kind of the epitome of like rock landing, and you don't necessarily have to do like an entire trip rock landing. You can be overlanding, yeah, with like rock landing sections.
Yeah.
So like when we did the BDR with Rob,
yep.
We hit Burnt Knob.
Mm-hmm.
So it went from overlanding to rock landing,
yeah,
in my opinion, because we're going up a steep grade, lots of rocks.
Yep.
Went from, you know, four high to four low. Mm-hmm. We didn't need lockers for that. But you had to, you know, have a high clearance. You had to have really
good. Well, I had blown my rear locker, so I didn't have one to use if I wanted it at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why it's nice to have a Jeep.
Yeah.
Because
you can blow your rear locker.
Blow your rear locker and still get up, no problem.
Yeah.
I didn't even put it in four-wheel drive. Were you in four-wheel drive? Yes, I was in four low. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, that's all you needed, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you're driving over some good-sized rocks, mm-hmm. and you couldn't just, like, there's a few like unmodified vehicles you could do it in, but you're not going to be happy.
No.
You're going to be scraping stuff.
Yeah. I think Rob got his first ding on that trail. I think Rob dinged a control arm or something like that.
Well, I think the comment he made was about like, well, I'm getting some use out of these new sliders.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was totally worth it. Right. Cause at the top was this like world class.
Yeah.
Like world class view. If you have not seen that video, you can just, it's called what it's Don't Blink is the thumbnail. It's a BDR video. It's number 5, I think, in the series. And it's where we go up to Burnt Knob as part of the Magruder Corridor. It is the most beautiful fire tower that I've ever dreamed of.
Yeah, it's a fire tower where it's not even a tower.
Not a tower. It's just on top of a boulder. It's an old cabin on boulder. It's just incredible. So just go, look, I don't care if you watch the rest of the video. Just go watch that drone sequence when we filmed it, because Rob and I did a really good job filming that particular piece of the BDR.
Oh,
Burnt Knob Lookout. Go look it up. It is beautiful. But the drive up is like, I don't know,
It's rock landing.
3 miles rock landering up.
Rock landing up?
Rock landering. Rock landering makes me think of like Flanders.
Oakley.
On the Simpsons. Yeah. Rock flandering. Yeah, that does not go together. I don't know. Flanders rock landing.
Yeah, it sounds like you're going up, but you're being very pious about it.
So that's what we think of rock landing. We're still kind of figuring it out. And the cool thing is that we're going to have some time to figure this out together because now you have 37s.
Yep.
And I have an incoming relationship with this little tiny company called Metal Cloak.
Never heard of them.
And Metal Cloak has been known to be a rock crawling company kind of as at their start, but really is leaning into rock landing and overlanding more and more and more. And I don't even know, dude, what I'm going to do with Metal Cloak. Like they have been so cool. Like when I first talked to them, they said, we want to turn strangers into friends and friends into customers. And I was like, I love that. That's so cool. And so we talked about a bunch of things and we were super aligned, super easy conversation. And so in 2023, I want to get out and start doing a little more technical trails. I want to push our rigs a little bit more. And I think the relationship with Metal Cloak is going to allow us to do that more than we have in the past. And so I'm excited for that. I don't know what I'm going to be driving. So this will be our future podcast. Like I have right now a Jeep JKU Sahara with 35s on it. And I am currently about to buy a new rig and I'm making videos about that too. So I don't want to give anything away, but I'm very close to having a new rig. And that rig will be built to do some rock landing.
Yeah.
Like we are going to build it specifically to go do some really cool stuff, to go see cool things and explore cool places, not just to like drive over a boulder for the sake of driving over a boulder.
Yeah. And Metal Cloak, like, you know, to their credit, the first time I ever heard the term rock landing was like on their website. Cause I'm running an adventure rack system.
Right.
Rack.
Which Metal Cloak owns.
Yeah. It used to be Cargo Master Safari. Mm-hmm. And so like they have a rock lander group on Facebook. And so that was like the first time I ever even heard the term. And I was like, what is this?
Mm.
And so I have to admit, like a lot of my views on what constitutes rock landing or rock landering, come from that. I'm having a hard time not telling people that you're not going to be buying a 1967 Yugo.
That's not on the list. We will do a whole episode about this. I want to end on this note. You bought a Cargo Safari Master rack right after Metal Cloak had purchased that company.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not send you install instructions.
Oh, and so this is, you're bringing up a very sore point with me.
Yes. And so but I have an end game for this. So you sent them a note and you were like, you didn't include the install instructions. However, I'm not mad at you. But it would be cool if you would like maybe send me a hat or something.
I'm all about the hats.
Yeah. And they were like, yeah, sure. We'll send you a hat. And then no hat came. So here's my thing. I think I can talk them into Metal Cloak, if you're listening to this, Chris, his birthday's coming up on April 30th, which mm-hmm. is just around the corner. A hat from Metal Cloak for your birthday would be an icing on the cake.
Yeah, it would mend all fences.
So maybe we can get you a hat or something. Maybe we're just putting this out into the universe and get you a hat for your birthday from Metal Cloak.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my suspension has like 80,000 miles on it. So if you want to send me a new suspension too, that's cool. I mean, I would not.
You heard it here, folks. Metal Cloak, there you go. There it is.
Yes, that is frontierstateoverland@gmail.com.
Well, that's it, dude. That's a way to end it. Very nice. So thanks, man. This has been a nice walk down memory lane. Always fun conversation. Way better to do it in person. So thanks, man. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for sharing your delicious aged rum.
Yeah, we're going to keep drinking that after the podcast is over. Yes, if you're listening to the podcast and you made it this far, please subscribe. It really, really helps. And if you haven't been over to Venture to Rome, which I know some people haven't, I met someone online who said, I found you on the podcast, and then I found your YouTube channel. Please go to Venture to Rome on YouTube and check out our videos. If you like them, subscribe. We have a ton of fun over there, and we are just getting started. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks again to Chris from Frontier State Overland. Thank you to Eminente Ron de Cuba for making excellent rum. And that's it for me. We'll see you next time.